Hello and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast that brings you animal facts, wildlife updates and nature stories from the professionals to you. This week's show is very exciting and important for so many reasons, so let me explain what's going on. This is a first for Into the Wild. This is our first ever panel show recorded with three guests over Zoom. Not only a first for us though, it's a first for the UK and likely many other Western countries as well, as we are discussing the topic of trophy hunting. But that's been done before, Ryan. Yeah, I know, but to my knowledge, never has this chat taken place while purely chatting to the people it directly affects. Three local key wildlife and community workers of Namibia. These people are Maxi Lewis, who has over 22 years of experience working with communities in conservation. John Willima, a member and advisor of the Banumu Conservancy in Namibia. And finally, Lorna Dax, manager of the Coyote and Howes Conservancy in Namibia. You may already have your opinions and views on trophy hunting. I did before I started this chat. However, I ask you to leave them here. This show is about talking to local people whose lives and livelihoods depend on trophy hunting, or since this interview, I now call conservation hunting. Maxi, Lorna and John don't just look at records or stats or bits of paper. They see with their own eyes the impact of conservation hunting. From the benefit to the people and local communities, to the animals and their survival, and to the habitat and the surrounding environment. It's easy for us in England, or America, or France, or Australia, etc., to criticise a method such as conservation hunting. However, we do not live in these countries. We should be listening to the people that live in these areas and learn more about the methods like this. As highlighted in the show, African people have harvested animals for hundreds of years. This isn't a new thing. Also, as pointed out, it's heavily regulated. But I don't want to give anything away. I also don't want you to think that you have to leave here being pro-conservation hunting. You don't. That's up to you. All you have to do is listen. Listen to these three voices. Voices that are often ignored when the discussion of conservation hunting comes up. For me, I've learnt so much more, and I understand it far greater. Could I hunt? No way. Do I understand why Americans or British people pay all this money to hunt? Not really. But do I think it's wrong, damaging, and needs to be stopped? Not anymore. Thanks so much for tuning in, and as always, enjoy the show. Hello to Maxi, Lorna and John. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm super excited to be talking to you about trophy hunting for today's show. I'm really excited to hear about all the experience and the knowledge that the three of you have on this topic. Let's start right away with how we start every single one of our shows, with my guests telling me and my listeners who you are and what is it you do. So Maxi, we'll start with you.
Let me first start. My name is Maxi Lewis, and I'm working for an organization called the Namibian Association of Community-Based Natural Resource Support Organization. I was born in Namibia, and I live here, and I support the communities that are involved in a program called conservancies. This is around 300 communities living in these rural areas, and they are all involved in community conservation aspects. So my job is to make sure that their voices are heard out there in terms of issues, whether it's issues around what we call in Namibia conservation hunting, just anything that has to do with conservation in general. So that is what I do for a living in Namibia. Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Thank you for having me on the platform.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. My next guest is John. John, would you like to explain to us who you are and what is it you do?
Yes, my name's John Musamwilima. I am a management member of Bamunu Conservancy. And they use me as an advisor of the management and also a spokesperson when the chairperson is busy. So I am a retired government official.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show with us, John. It's lovely to have you here. And my last guest who's joining me today is Lorna. Lorna, thanks so much for joining us as well. Would you like to tell everyone who you are and what is it you do?
Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for having me. My name is Lorna Dax. I'm the manager of a communal conservancy called the Kwalimwas Conservancy, which is within the boundaries of Namibia. I was born at a village called Erbia, which is also situated within the conservancy boundaries. And I am responsible for the administration of the conservancy office, and I'm responsible to ensure that we adhere to policies and guidelines that are set for conservancies to operate with. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining me. Like I said to you when we first all met up, I'm really excited about talking about this topic. It's something we hear lots about, but not really from the right people. So it's lovely to have you here. To help myself and everyone that's listening to the show today understand really what trophy hunting is, in your own words, and Maxie, we'll start with you. Could you just explain to us what trophy hunting actually is?
In my own words, this is harvesting. This is just way of harvesting animals. And in Namibia, without being too academic, we have been harvesting animals over time, and we have been doing this for some reasons. Traditionally, in general, not just in Namibia, in Africa, people do hunt. And most of these things are also used for traditional usages and cultural festivals and cultural traditions and so forth. Mm. But also over the years, we also have been using it for economic exchanges. So, for instance, in Namibia as a country, we have policies that are guiding us in terms of, you know, using hunting as a way of also having economic gains for the communities themselves and landowners. You need to understand. I just need to explain a little bit for the viewers in understanding what the land system in Namibia is. We have people that own land, and on the land they have there is wildlife on that land. And that's what we call the commercial farms. And then we have communal areas. This is where John and Lorna is coming from. So this is open landscapes where they live, and they have they're doing wildlife management, but they are also living on this land, and they have livestock on this land. And then we have parks, which is government parks, where wildlife is fenced off, and this wildlife is on the land, those lands. So in a huge landscape in Namibia, especially the communal one where I work with communities. So we do, there is trophy hunting that is being done on these lands, and has been done over years. It's harvested. There is regulations in place to make sure that communities get value for wildlife on that land, but they also use it as a conservation tool. So that's the two things that I can say what the harvesting is all about. So in Namibia, we also call it conservation hunting. We don't really use the word trophy hunting. Conservation hunting encompasses trophy hunting, traditional uses, cultural uses for hunting. So it's sustainable use, but we call it conservation hunting. Thank you.
So this one thing, that's an interesting point you said there, because I didn't know that. A lot of people, what I hear, who speak up about trophy hunting always say it's a very colonial thing, that it comes back from colonial times. But actually, as you said there, it's something that is deep within tradition and culture for places in Namibia. Is that correct?
It is the colonial aspect. We cannot run away from that. But how many other colonial aspects have we also not integrated as Africans within our setups?
Yeah.
So you look at livestock. Livestock was not an African thing, but we have integrated that, and we use it even for our own cultural values and festivals as part of that. So we see the good of it. In terms of using it for our own benefit. So that's exactly what we have done with trophy hunting. As much as it's a colonial aspect, we have turned it in Namibia into a very positive thing and made it to be beneficial for the communities as long, and I want to emphasize it, as long as it's being done within the within the boundaries of the law, and we need to respect that. I think then it is something that can be embraced, and we have embraced it over years, and it's working for us. We have more wildlife than we ever had in a lifetime in our country.
Wonderful, thank you. John, we'll go to you next. For you, what would you say to people that trophy hunting for you is?
I will tell you why I prefer to call it conservation hunting.
Yes, sorry.
Namibia, through the Drive Ministry, the Ministry of Environment, Tourism and Forestry, grants definite quotas to conservancies every year, registered conservancies for this matter. And this quota is meant for sustainable hunting. Professional operators, for example, that we call hunters, wishing to buy a granted quota, will sign a contract of obligation with the conservancy of choice. And the ministry guidelines guides the conservancies how to receive the income from professional operators and instructs these conservancies to monitor and distribute income following a particular plan, which is called a benefit distribution plan. 50% of the income will definitely go to community benefit, and another 50% is for conservancy operation costs. It is community who determines their need, let me say our need, and then in which areas the income should be allocated as per percentage received. It is for this reason that we prefer to call it conservation hunting, because it's a system of sustainable harvesting as opposed to careless hunting or sport hunting.
Yeah, that's amazing. 50% even split. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't realize it was like that, and that's very clear now why you said you prefer to call that conservation hunting, because it, in reality that's what it is. There's very little trophy about it. Lorna, we'll go on to you next. For you, in your own words, what would you say that, I'm going to call it conservation hunting, what would you say conservation hunting is for you?
Well, Ryan, conservation hunting for me, as a person coming from the local communities and as a person that is also employed within our conservancy, I would say conservation hunting for us is harvesting of carefully selected animals, such as the elephants, the lions, leopards, and the hyenas. And coming from a community that has a high unemployment rate, I would say conservation hunting changes the livelihoods of us people that are on the ground, as it creates employment opportunities for locals when the hunters come in or at the conservancy as well.
Amazing. So yeah, another really important topic about the employment there. That's I think something that is lost quite a lot in communication when it gets over to somewhere like the UK. It's something that is embarrassingly not actually picked up enough. One of my questions next was going to be, why do landowners use conservation hunting? But I think you, all three of you, have perfectly summed up very important reasons why. My next question, and John, we'll go to you first for this, is in what way does the funds raised from conservation hunting, how is that put back into conserving the habitat and the animals?
Yes, Vamunu Conservancy, for example, is a vast tract of land. It's a conservancy that is wide. It is 556 square kilometers. And all that land, Jan, cannot be used for agricultural purposes only. And land use management needs to be applied because the land is vast. And therefore, land use management calls for diversification. We use conservation hunting to harvest old stock, and we draw benefit from the harvest. And conservation hunting provides employment, as a colleague has already said, employment to the youth, and regular patrols, for example, of community game guards and ministry joint patrols. This we mean the game rangers from the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, Forestry and Tourism. Also, there is some security forces that are called in when joint patrols are conducted, like maybe two or three security personnel, the police, together with the community game guards. And what happens now is that when they go for joint patrols, the message is sent. And this caps, for example, the possible people who want to poach. And this also protects the animals from invaders. We provide wildlife, for example, with borehole water when the rivers have gone dry. And that is how we protect and the wildlife. We also provide salt licks to these animals during dry seasons. We conduct community awareness against wildfires, and we inform community that if, for example, we have few wildlife species, then they will lose out on the benefits that they are receiving. Therefore, I would say that conservation hunting, in our case, you know, benefit both animals, and it benefits the communities. That's how I view this process of conservation hunting.
That's very interesting, especially from the land management as well. Like you said, with the water and the salt licks, two very important things for animals, for a community to provide that. That's very important. Lorna, we'll go to you as well for this. How would you say that conservation hunting helps the local habitat and also the animals as well?
Thank you, Ryan. Land owners, in our case, the local communities, are living along wildlife, and they benefit financially from this wildlife. We are a conservancy that is about 364,000 hectares, and we have over 4,000 people living within our conservancy. And as I said earlier before, unemployment is a very concerning issue within our conservancy area. And jobs have been created through protecting this wildlife. Say, for instance, we don't call them game guards at our conservancy. We prefer to call them the environmental shepherds, because they not only focus on the game, they focus on the whole environment. So they would do anti-poaching activities with Save the Rhino Trust, with the ministry, alongside with the Namibian police. And local community members see conservation as, they don't see wildlife as competition or as a threat, because on a day-to-day basis, they live alongside the wildlife. Say, for instance, I, as a farmer, sleep with an elephant standing at my backyard, or I would take out my livestock while the lion is somewhere near the mountains. So trophy hunting games motivate local communities to look after the wildlife, and this causes wildlife species to increase in numbers. And conservation hunting helps to control wildlife numbers, because if there is a high number of wildlife and lack of food for them, they will die a natural death, and it will be a loss to both conservation, both the communities, and also the wildlife itself.
Yeah, and that's another thing that you both mentioned, which is very interesting, is actually the people protecting the land. A lot of some of the money is going to that, which is incredibly important when it's, like you said, when it's illegal poaching going on as well, to actually protect the animals. That's something that I think, again, we forget needs policing and enforcement. And if this conservation hunting is funding that, that's a very important point to add in. So thank you both for bringing that up, because again, it's something that I forget about. You both mentioned as well kind of land sizes, because this is an interesting point to make as well. Not many people know or realise how much land is actually managed under conservation hunting. So John, we'll start with you. Is there a rough kind of, I don't want to put you on the pressure with numbers, but like, how much land is used throughout Namibia and also other places in Africa for conservation hunting?
In Namibia, I may not be able to give you the correct answer, but for the conservancy, community conservancy called Wamunu Conservancy, in which we are in, I would say that the entire Bamunu Conservancy follows a particular plan of land management. It is called a zonation map. It's a requirement of land management by the ministry. You cannot have a conservancy without land management plan.
Mm.
And the land management plan means that you have to zone the areas within. For example, in Bamunu Conservancy, there is an area zoned for human settlement where people reside and where people settle.
Mm.
Then there is another zone for agricultural purposes where community fields are allocated for agricultural purposes. Then there is a core area. I think this is the one that is very important for us. It's the core area where wildlife reside, breed, and rest.
Mm.
We try our level best not to disturb that area. And people are aware about it. And this is the area that is core for production, if you like. And then there's multi-purpose areas also. Some areas will require human activities for a short time, and then they must vacate that place for a while also to allow animals to come and roam freely.
Mm.
So this is how the land ownership and management is done in Bamunu Conservancy. I will not be answering for Namibia, but I think that question goes to Maxi.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Lorna, we'll go to you for this question as well. In regards to size of land, kind of, I guess, how much is used, what's the scale of amount of land that uses conservation hunting?
We as a conservancy, as I said before, we are 364,000 hectares. And across the whole conservancy, conservation is being practiced because it is a multiple use area. And as my colleague said earlier, the conservancy is also zoned. And this is a requirement from the ministry as well. And although our conservancies are zoned, we don't have fences. So just because a conservancy is zoned doesn't mean the wildlife is kept separately from the farmers and kept in a certain camp.
Mm.
Although the conservancies are zoned and zonations are clearly stated that this specific area is going to be for tourism, this one is going to be for conservation hunting, and this one is going to be for agricultural purposes. Unfortunately, wildlife does not understand and they don't talk. So since there are no fences, they move around everywhere. And everyone within the conservancy throughout this 364,000 hectares practices conservation.
That's an interesting point as well then, and thank you, John, for bringing up that point about the zones, because that's something as well that we never hear of, is how the land is managed as well as the size. So, Lorna, what does happen when wildlife goes between those zones? Because like you said, they can't talk, we can't communicate that. Wildlife is always going to do what wildlife wants to do. How is that managed if animals cross into, I don't want to say the incorrect zone, because the animal doesn't know, but if they do wander into the zone where they're not meant to be?
As I said, these zones do not have fences, and wildlife move around freely. So we have what we call the environmental shepherds, as I said before, say they would do regular patrols within farm areas to see if there are any human wildlife conflict activities. They would report it to the office. And we also have what we call the rhino rangers.
Mm.
They are mostly based in the core wildlife areas that John mentioned before. And they are particularly focused on the rhinos and ensuring that their regular patrols are done and that they see all the rhinos that is set within the conservancy boundaries. So if human wildlife conflict arises, the environmental shepherds would investigate this, and then we offset a farmer at the end of the day, although we don't pay them the actual value of the cattle that they have lost. We offset them with a certain percentage of amount just to make them realize that we as conservancies also care for them.
Wonderful, thank you. And another question I was going to ask, and I think we've kind of summed up a bit of this, but I will ask you both to see if there's any more you can add. John, we'll start with you. Is conservation hunting regulated and done safely? Now, I know we have touched on a few points there, but is there anything else you would like to add in regards to how it is regulated?
For sure it is regulated because it is a government policy in the first place. And secondly, you will see that they are scheduled joint patrols are conducted to count game. Specified animals, species in the event books are counted and recorded. The ministry then uses this data that was collected and recorded in the event book to determine the quota that it can give to each and every conservancy according to the population growth of specific species. Now, this determination on this determination of which quota goes to which conservancy is the sole responsibility of the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, representing government for that matter. And there is no influence whatsoever from communities or from conservancies to say, no, this year we want maybe 7 or maybe 8 kind of species. What you are given, the quota that you are given, is the only quota that you should receive without even questions. So this is how government, in my view, regulates the system.
Wonderful. And Lorna, is there anything else you would like to add regarding conservation hunting, how it's regulated and done safely?
Okay, I would say conservation hunting within Namibia is regulated very well. And this is done through the quota system, as my colleague mentioned before, by the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. And there are also restrictions on the species that can be hunted and where it can be hunted and when it can be hunted. And the quotas that we receive are valid for 3 years, and so it has to be reviewed every 3 years. And just because we have a quota doesn't mean as a conservancy we can go out and hunt anytime. Because after receiving the quota, we still need to apply for a hunting permit to the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism anytime that we would like to practice hunting. And just for your interest's sake, we received the new quota now that is valid from 2020 to 2022, and we only have 7 species on that, and only one of them is a predator that can only be hunted. We can only hunt one throughout the 3 years. So I think the quota system and hunting in Namibia is very regulated.
Absolutely, yes. That's very interesting regarding the government and the quotas. It's a very, very well managed system by the sounds of it. Maxi, I'll go to you for this question first, because this is something that there's a lot of talk about this in the UK and America and other countries, and it's kind of a topic that always comes up, but I don't really know the answers to this. But Maxi, we'll start with you. Why do alternatives such as ecotourism, for example, why do these not work as well in comparison to conservation hunting in regards to raising funds?
So let me first explain that, you know, my first job, and I think John and Lorna will remember this, I was working very much for an ecotourism tourism organization, and that was to create awareness among our communities in all over Namibia in terms of, you know, trying to use their resources for ecotourism lodges, but also just ecotourism activities and so forth. And both of them, to be honest, the issue of conservation hunting and ecotourism, it's well accepted in my country. But we are a country, it's a very contrast country. In one part of the country, and this is where John comes from, it's a area that is well resourced with natural resources, from wildlife to trees to people to everything. On the other side of the country where Lorna comes from, a totally different aspect. This is a semi-desert area. So there's lots of wildlife on that particular piece of land, on that part of the world. But it's also an area that is not very conducive in hosting a lot of wildlife, because you need to strike a balance when you are there. and also an area where, including where John is also coming from, not all the areas are very attractive for ecotourism. So people will not just go there and just stay because they have to stay there. They need to be something that they paid for to come to any country. So not every area is very attractive for ecotourism. So as a result, in both conservancies, and they can share their experiences, we try to do both. So we try to do ecotourism, especially with very good plants and very good land uses. You can do both. There's nothing wrong with that. So in most of sub-Saharan Africa, not just Namibia, it's difficult just to have ecotourism. But we also look at ecotourism as if it also does not have its flaws. It does. It has an impact. You know, I work in an area in Namibia, not even anywhere else in the world, in Namibia, and the two colleagues, especially Lorna, will know Tweefontein is a World Heritage Site. It attracts a lot of tourists coming there. And when I started working in that area, there were something like 20 farmers, communal farmers, living there. Today, we have over 2,000 people that have come for jobs into that area. What has happened in that area? It has trashed a lot of the area there. There's a lot of driving going on there. There's a lot of water. There's a lot of, you know, animals being bothered by people, including tourists. You know, there's no industry that does not have its flaws. So we try and balance both of them. And it's good for our environment in Namibia that we use both of them. If we just use ecotourism alone, it will not employ everybody in that community. It will not provide meat to everybody in that community. It will not save habitat to all these people, the habitat that we have from both at the moment. At least a combination between ecotourism and conservation hunting gives us large areas for conservation, open up more habitats for conservation. It also creates more motivation for communities to get involved and save the habitat for more wildlife.
Thank you very much. That's a very interesting point, especially from where you said that area that suddenly gets flooded with people. That's an incredibly interesting point to bring up. John, is there anything you would like to add in regards to why ecotourism does not work as well as conservation hunting?
Although ecotourism may be a business option, in some places in Namibia, it is not a business option everywhere. Because, for example, the current situation where we live, where I live, is that rivers that should attract animals and feed plants and fauna and flora, and the rest of the greeneries get dried up every winter until the next rainy season in summer. Therefore, the current environment is disturbed by the global warming that dries up the rivers. And therefore, ecotourism in such places is very difficult, because even the wildlife at the moment, we pump water from underground during this dry season to provide for them. And during that time, you only see animals and birds that come in, and it's not a good scenery, so to speak, you know, for ecotourism. So it is very true that some places we may use it. In other places, it's difficult to use it. But it is an option, yes, that is available to us.
Thank you. Lorna, we'll come on to you now. That's an interesting point that John brought up, and I wondered if, Lorna, you could elaborate on that as well. Is ecotourism, you know, as you've all said so far, can work, but not always in area. Is that also to do with a seasonal effect? Like people, like John said, areas will dry up, so therefore wildlife moves. And is that one of the reasons why ecotourism doesn't work in some places?
Yes, Ryan. Coming from a conservancy that does both tourism and conservation hunting, I would say only if a conservancy only focuses on ecotourism and we completely leave out conservation hunting, it would be very difficult for some of our conservancies, because as we all know, scenery is not equally distributed, as my two colleagues said earlier. So there might not be something attractive in one conservancy that would attract a person to travel to that conservancy area. And also, ecotourism only can cause disturbance to the wildlife and movement of wildlife as well.
Yeah.
And when it comes to ecotourism, we need to create lodges and have partnerships and all that. And at the moment, we have lack of funding for only focusing on ecotourism and then leaving trophy hunting or conservation hunting out. And we as communities also struggle to get investors that would like to invest in our conservancy areas if we would like to start with ecotourism activities.
Thank you very much. There's I'm going to say speaking personally, but again, when I say speaking personally, I mean from a life here in the UK, which is very different to where you guys are with what we understand and what we know about conservation hunting. And I think if we're talking to people in the UK, what some people struggle to understand, and myself at times, I'm not going to excuse myself from that, but we struggle to understand why someone from America or the UK would want to hunt an animal. Why would they want to do that to protect it? Why would they want to do that to protect it? And why would they not just want to go and see it to protect it? But I kind of now understand more, as you've all spoken to me, about why that's not an option or why people might not do that. But John, what would you say to people that ask you, like, why do we have to kill the animal to preserve it? Why can we not just see it to preserve it? I know it's a very complex answer, but what would you say to people that ask that to you?
You see, in this part of the country, animals move freely, and there are quite many. And it is always a problem if animals are not harvested. And the harvesting is aimed at the old stock, just to balance nature.
Mm.
We do not sell maybe any animal that is not reached a particular age.
Mm.
It should qualify for, should I call it, it should qualify for harvest. Now, the problem is, Namibia, most of its part is savanna. And when we have many, many elephants, they will disturb the livelihood of people. For example, they will get into their field, destroy the fields, and they will die naturally, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And if they die naturally, there's no benefit driven from there. So there is a need to select. And when the ministry composes the quotas, the guidelines are very clear to say this is what qualifies and this is what does not qualify. So it is not a question of sport hunting or maybe careless hunting. No, it is selected species. And for that matter, they need to be, like I say, they need to qualify in a particular category to be hunted. For example, I'll give you an example of trophy elephant hunting. In 2017, for example, there was three elephants that were given for trophies in my conservancy, in our conservancy. But they did not get that one. And in 2018, also three was given, but none of the trophy animals were found. Therefore, they were not fallen, they were not killed. And again, they are not transferred into the next contract. So therefore, you will see that if a trophy elephant is on the quota and it is regarded as, or it is considered to be not optional but guaranteed, the operator will pay for that even if he did not get it. And that means now the conservancies receive money. And if, for example, there was another way to help up these conservancies, look at 39 people, households that are employed within Bamunu Conservancy.
Mm.
At the end of the year, in the past 3 years, The Conservancy has received 1.6 million. And if we are able to receive this money from elsewhere without hunting, you know, provide livelihood to these people, then maybe we'll look at it somehow. But the question now is that what will we do with the increasing population of the elephant that is also impacting on the livelihood of the people? Therefore, I believe in that conservation hunting is the way to go, because it's not careless, it is regulated, and benefits are driven from the hunting process.
That's a really fascinating point that you mentioned there about the quotas, as you gave the example in 2017 with the three elephants that were given as quoted and then were not caught, but the money was still given over. That's something I've never heard of, and quite important information, I guess, for the world to know and understand how conservation hunting works. It's not, as you said, it's not a fenced area. It's, you know, the animals can move freely. It's done very differently. So that's a really fascinating point to bring up. Thank you for that. Lorna, we'll go on to you. I wonder, Lorna, if you could answer a bit more. A point that John brought up there is how the animals work with the local people as well, because that's something we forget. I mean, obviously, I've never experienced living next to big game animals myself here in London. But how much of a risk can the animals be to the local people in these communities?
Well, the wildlife within our conservancy is very important for our local communities, because, as I said before, we also have tourism activities that are taking place within our conservancy. We do own two lodges, and we also own a campsite, and we employ over 100 people at those sites, and 90% of those people are local people from the community. So when it comes to conservation hunting, it's not all about the money. For us locals, we would just like to strike a balance between the people and the animals. So if there is no hunting, then obviously the wildlife numbers will increase, and then wildlife and livestock will compete for grazing. And alongside with that, human-wildlife conflict will also increase, and the farmers will be losing more of their livestock that they depend on. And if conservation hunting is taken out completely, they would be losing their livestock, and they would also losing the benefits that are coming from conservation hunting. So conservation hunting within the communities, we use it also as a management tool to control the wildlife figures, and also to ensure that the grazing also recovers from the livestock of the farmers and the wildlife grazing on them.
Thank you. And Maxie, we'll come on to you as well for this point, because I know you've said spoken on this point before, but when people will say, you know, why kill the animal? Why do that? Why can we not do alternatives? Because it's a very common thing we hear over here in the UK. What would you answer to that if someone asked that?
One of the things that I initially wanted to contribute is just showing there's a couple of points that I want to make before I get to respond to your answer, Ryan. This is in Namibia, we have around 46% of land that is under conservation. Wow. And for a country to give so much to conservation tells you about the passion. We are really passionate about environment. We are very passionate about conservation. And because we depend, 70% of our communities, 70% of people that live in Namibia depend on natural resources. So we guide our resources very, very, very jealously to make sure that we look after our habitat. And I also want to just mention something that we are, the communities that you just talked about, they are conservationists. They are people that are really, really very fond about conservation. And they are not barbaric people that are just going there and trying to kill animals. No, that's not the type of people that you're looking at here. You're looking at people that really care for wildlife. So the question is, why would somebody just come and kill them if they love wildlife so much? For us, it's a tool that we have used over years, actually over decades, and we have seen it to be working. So And it's a choice that we have made as a country. Mm-hmm. We have gone into a choice saying, if you want to make sure that we save species, that we save our elephants, we save our rhinos, we save our lions, and it works for us to save these species, then we would like to go that way. And over the years, we have seen increase. I mean, this is a country that hosts the largest free roaming black rhino that really nearly went for extinction.
Mm.
It's hosting our country, and we do conservation hunting, and it's working for us. We have the world's largest cheetah population. We have increased our elephant population. So that is because the type of conservation management tool that we are using, and we are not the only country in sub-Saharan Africa, or other countries are also using it. But I'm just making an example because we're talking about my country here, that it is working for us. And I'm just thinking, these people are not heartless killers that are coming to help us to conserve. We are asking them to make their contribution, and we explain everything that we have explained to you today. Mm. We explain to them. They are not forced to do it. They come in. They are also conservationists in their own right. They are being branded here as selfless killers. They are murderers. I don't think so. I have worked over 25 years with hunters. And not all of them, but the majority of them that I work with, and working with the communities, and the communities can speak for themselves. These are people that talk mostly, not about killing all the time. They talk about how can we make sure that the communities benefit? How can we make sure that we actually have areas open for conservation? So these are real people. They are conservationists. They're just like you and me and the communities. They are no different.
I think that's a very good point to make as well. I think what I've learned just from this conversation with the three of you today is that I think there's too much concentration on the word hunting and not enough on conservation. I think what I've learned so far from all three of you is that the level of kind of regulation, the safety, the work that goes in from, like you said, the communities, from the government, to really conserve that environment, the people, the communities, the animals, is massive. And that's what I guess I've really taken away from this today, is that hunting is this much of it, tiny, tiny, tiny. And sometimes, like John said, doesn't even happen sometimes. And that's, I think, these are key points to get across. My other question, John, we'll go to you first for this, is there's charities here in the UK and around the world, but here in the UK, that will make claims, and I won't mention any names of the charities, but they will make claims that people, animals, habitat, environment don't benefit from conservation hunting, or trophy hunting, as they call it. They will say that it's not beneficial, it's, you know, it doesn't help people. These are all, I don't want to use this word really, but lies. And it's misleading information. What would be your reply to those charities?
Yes, Srian, that's a good question. My first reply to that one is that those who say so are entitled to their opinions.
Mm.
And but let's get back to the point. How do people benefit? We've already spoken about employment. That is benefit of the people.
Mm.
And secondly, we've talked about people themselves making decisions about their own development, their own needs, to say this money should be channeled to develop us in this way.
Yeah.
That is a huge benefit. And also we have seen that with this, like Vamunu Conservancy, for example, the community decided to invest into rural electrification.
Mm.
And that means now small businesses are coming up because of the power generated from electricity. We have seen also the improvement in terms of the health, because you recall that some ailments, for example, like diabetes, they will need some few vaccines, not necessarily vaccines, but medication that need to be restored under controlled temperatures. They will put them in the fridges because now they have electricity. So there are a lot of other things that people benefit from. For example, our conservancy also has a sponsorship of the grade, the secondary learners. If a child, for example, passes well, the highest achiever at a high school, that child is sponsored to go to university.
Mm.
And when that person graduates, now they come back to the community and invest. There is also a provision made for preschools. In Namibia, we have a system where we have a childhood development before the child starts school. And in those areas, there are monies, direct income that is given to those people, and then receipts are received for the sake of auditing. And then the conservancies are doing well and on auditing. That is why the government continues to support it. If the conservancy doesn't fail the audit, normally there is a way of discouraging that, even cancelling it, degazetting it, if it mismanages the monies.
Mm.
Therefore, I would say that people are benefiting, the members within the community are benefiting. Let's come to the animals. The animals also benefit. They are being protected by patrols. And when, for example, there is a certain animal that is sick, it is reported to the ministry, and the ministry does something. If animals, for example, don't have water, we drill boreholes. Already boreholes are already drilled. We pump out water for the animals, and we also provide them with certain leaks so that the animals can also feel that they are protected. And let's look at the habitat. Mm. The habitat also is the environment of the plants and animals. And we care for that by getting into the people and giving them awareness against wildfires, to inform them that if they destroy environment, they will be destroying not only the grass and the trees, they will also destroy animals, and they will also destroy the likelihood of a good livelihood.
Mm.
Therefore, I see that animals benefit in this process, people benefit in this process, and also the environment or the habitat benefits.
Thank you. And I think that's a key point to add there, is that you see it benefiting. And I think that's one thing that I'm kind of proud that we can present today, is that it's you, the three of you, are seeing the benefits from this. Lorna, I'll go on to you as well. What would you say as a reply to these charities that are saying that people, animals and habitat are not benefiting from conservation hunting?
Well, Ryan, based on our wildlife figures, it is very evident that our local communities and our people are conserving very well. And I think the only reason that we as communities continue to conserve is because we are benefiting from it.
Mm.
And when it comes to the money generated through conservation hunting, we do, as any other organization, we do have our annual general meetings where the community members themselves decide how the funds that are generated from conservation hunting are going to be utilized. And conservation hunting is the only source of income for some of our conservancies.
Mm.
There is no other way where that we as communities also get an extra income from, or we are not making profit from some other thing. So we use these funds, these funds that we get from conservation hunting. For example, within our conservancy, we have bulk lion-proof grouse or predator-proof grouse, and this was done to protect both the farmers and the predators as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we have bulk dams as well with solar, so that is working with a solar system instead of the normal gas generators.
Wow.
So in a way, we are also fighting the climate change issue. Mm. And with the building of dams, we have also brought water closer to farmers as well as the wildlife. And human-wildlife conflict is something that we face on a daily basis within our conservancy. And those are the funds that come from conservation hunting and tourism. Those funds are being used to tackle the human-wildlife conflict issues within the communities. If a farmer loses his sheep and a conservancy doesn't have income because conservation hunting was stopped, unfortunately, that conservancy will not have funds to offset that farmer. And in return, the farmer will be unhappy and the farmer will not practice conservation anymore. And they will be discouraged as they are not getting anything from conservation and they are only losing their livestock. So I think so far, the reason that our communities are conserving is because they are benefiting and they see the benefit from conservation hunting.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you've both made it, for me especially, incredibly clear that the benefits are there and that they are happening. My last question, I'm going to ask all three of you this. This is something I usually ask my guests on all of our episodes, is my usual question is, if you could pass on one bit of advice to everyone regarding the natural world, what would it be? But I'm going to change this question slightly to fit with the topic we're talking about today. And Maxi, we'll start with you. If you could just give one message to everyone around the world about conservation hunting, what would you pass on?
You know, I'll pass on the following message. You know, I think, especially now with COVID-19, I think it's a wake-up call for the world that we have to conserve. We have to look after our resources, and the environment is one foundation that we need to look after. I think we have been economically exploiting too much, and we have not been thinking about our environment.
Mm.
And our wildlife actually suffered because of that. So my message is, listen to what people are saying around environment. Listen to what people are saying around conservation, and listen to the real people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not become too much emotional about issues. I think in some ways it's also emotions that actually create more problems for ourselves, because we don't want to listen to those ones who live side by side with wildlife, who live side by side with the environment. If we can just give an ear and listen, and also accept some of the decisions. They might not be something that we like, but that is their decision and we need to respect those decisions.
Thank you. John, if you could pass on one message to everyone on the planet about conservation hunting, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that it's very important to listen to the people who are experiencing life within areas where wildlife is.
Mm.
And these people, if they complain about wildlife, then help them. But if they do not complain about wildlife, then support them.
Mm.
Because it is important to conserve wildlife instead. Because without these conservation guidelines and stuff like this, you know, we will have people attacking animals and they are going to be depleted.
Mm.
Thank you,
John. And Lorna, finally for yourself, if you could pass on one message to everyone around the world regarding conservation hunting, what would you pass on?
My message would be that we as local communities are the ones that is living along the wild every day of our lives. We are the ones that are facing the dangers and the losses through human wildlife conflict. So I would like to ask that they also consider our feelings and also consider our efforts that we are putting towards conservation, and also know that we are living with wildlife at our backyards on a daily basis.
Mm.
Whenever we go to sleep, the wildlife is there, the elephant is there, the lion is there. So as a farmer, I look after the wild. If I do not benefit from it, why do I have to give all the efforts? And where will conservation end up?
Thank you very much. And thank you again to all three of you for joining me on today's show. This has been, I feel like my brain is bubbling with information right now. It's been amazing to actually hear from all three of you and hear some points that I had no idea about the way. I mean, even me calling it conservation hunting now instead of trophy hunting, I think is a good thing. So really, thank you so much for joining me on today's show. And thank you so much for all the work that all three of you do regarding this. It's very important. And I look forward to getting this episode out there so everyone else can hear what you've said today.
Thank you so much for giving us the platform. We really appreciate that.
Thanks again for listening. If you'd like to get in touch regarding the topic of conservation hunting from today's show, then I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at intothewildpod@gmail.com. I'll be recording another short episode on this topic with Professor Adam Hart, so any questions you have, chuck them over. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify and Podbean. You can also get in touch on social media at Into the Wild Pod on Twitter or Into the Wild Podcast on Instagram. Whether it's just to say hello, share some thoughts on an episode, or even let me know what you want to hear about next. And as always, until next time, keep well, stay safe, and live the good life.